had logarithms, electricity, calculus, Newton's laws, Galileo's observations, telescopes, and, thanks to von Leeuwenhoek's inventiveness, more sophisticated microscopes. But it would take another few centuries for us to understand the infectious nature of certain bacteria and discover antibiotics, which is something that really happened by chance. Antibiotics have saved millions of lives since the early 20th century, but we now have a different problem. As a result of the profligate use of these powerful drugs over the course of more than 50 years, we've spurred the creation of drug-resistant superbugs. Some have argued that the superbug problem is on a par with climate change in terms of severity. In 2016, the United Nations convened over the matter and pledged to fight antibiotic resistance in a historic agreement. The FDA has begun to ban certain products that contain antimicrobial ingredients for fear they will fuel more resistant strains of bacteria. The Western world's obsession with hygiene has only worsened the situation. Take a look around you. Sanitizer dispensers are everywhere. Soaps in public restrooms are often antimicrobial. Public areas are doused in bleach, and municipal water sources are cleansed with chlorine. Every day, you expose yourself to these chemicals, which are torpedoing your skin and its microbiome. Even daily showers compound your vulnerability. Don't panic. I won't be asking you to stop bathing, but I will be telling you how to do so more safely. There's a lot you can do, including choosing which soaps to use at home and knowing how to avoid the antimicrobials in public venues. Although many of us still perceive bacteria as agents of death, the time has come to appreciate another side to their purpose in our lives. They are, after all, among the original inhabitants of the Earth, beating us by billions of years. While there are some bad bugs out there, there are some more good ones that are critical, not detrimental, to a healthful life. Supporting their functionality is the only way to not just win the war against superbugs, but also restore our skin health. Before I highlight what beneficial bacteria can do for our skin, I want to reiterate some important facts so you can grasp how powerful probiotics can be in helping support the body's microbiome. Recall that your microbiome helps control a lot of your physiology, especially your immune system. Through the actions of their surface proteins, which act as antennae and receive messages, and the substances they manufacture, which interact with your own cells, your microbial partners share some of the driver's seat. They speak to your cells all the way down to your DNA. Not only do they collaborate with your body's chief systems, they can also affect the expression of your DNA. I know, it's hard to believe, but your microbiome helps control the expression of genes involved with a variety of physiological factors, including nutrient absorption, energy metabolism, intestinal barrier function, immunity, and inflammation pathways, which means they also mightily influence whether or not you develop a skin condition. One more bit of information I want to mention before we move on comes from the work of Dr. Martin Blaser, the director of New York University's Human Microbiome Project. He is among the pioneering researchers who have done extensive work on how the microbiome establishes itself and how disruptions in its early development can result in health challenges later in life. He and his wife, Dr. Maria Gloria Dominguez-Bello, also a researcher at NYU, have documented that children whose microbiomes are somehow compromised or imbalanced go on to have a much higher risk in adulthood for a slew of conditions such as allergies, diabetes, and obesity. Their work in the obesity realm has been particularly interesting and informative for me because I practice in a field where antibiotics are still the gold standard for many treatments. What Blaser and his colleagues had determined, that chronic overuse of antibiotics can lead to obesity through their impact on the microbiome, will no doubt change how we work. Blaser effectively demonstrated that when young mice received low doses of antibiotics, they gained 15% more body fat than mice that weren't exposed to the antibiotics. In another study, he and his team gave mice a high-fat diet together with antibiotics, leading those mice to become obese. His control group, which ate the same high-fat diet but did not receive antibiotics, did not become obese. Antibiotic-treated females fared far worse. They added twice as much body fat as did their untreated female counterparts who ate the same high-fat diet. Antibiotics change the composition of the gut bacteria to favor strains that encourage weight gain. Dermatologists often use low-dose antibiotics to treat skin conditions such as rosacea over the long term. Considered a safer option compared to high-dose antibiotics because the low dose limits the risks of resistance and other common side effects. They were meant to be more anti-inflammatory than antibacterial. But now that we're seeing what they can do to animals, we are facing a new era. And yes, this is how farmers fatten up their livestock, using antibiotics, not just to kill bad bacteria, but also to change the animals' microbiomes and, in turn, their metabolisms so they grow bigger, faster. In the future, it's possible that we will turn only to probiotics to address skin conditions whose treatments once relied primarily on antibiotics. Probiotic actions in your favor. When it comes to overall skin health, probiotics, whether oral or topical, counter harmful bacteria in the gut and on the skin, support barrier function, both in the intestines and on the skin, contribute to the regulation of the immune system, both inside and out, by helping control inflammation and oxidative stress, and help maintain the working balance of the all-important gut-brain-skin axis. The next revolution in skin medicine. In 2015, I published a paper with my colleague Dr. Mary Margaret Kober that presented a review of what we know about the effectiveness of probiotics in addressing various skin disorders as well as aging. This added to a growing body of exciting new research about how we can leverage the power of probiotics in treating skin. Human clinical trials and animal studies have provided enough data about probiotics' effects at the molecular level to build a strong, compelling case for their role in treating a wide array of skin conditions while slowing the manifestations of aging, both on the inside and outside. Certain strains are even showing promise with respect to acne, rosacea, and redness, and dry skin and eczema. The question that science is currently trying to address is how probiotics can best be used. In other words, should a topical, oral, or combination approach be recommended? Which strains are most effective? And is it ideal to create a formulation with probiotics and other ingredients that enhance the skin's barrier function? Given where the research stands now and where it's headed, I think it's wise to employ probiotics both orally and topically. Let's look at some of this promising new science, starting with topical probiotics. Topical probiotic power. Google probiotics in skincare and nearly a million results emerge in 0.72 seconds. That's how hot this area is in beauty and wellness circles. Virtually every cosmetics and skincare company is developing probiotic masks, creams, sprays, and cleansers. Why? Because the science behind what they can do is already scaring those bad bugs away. In many ways, probiotics are the new antibiotics and the new antidotes to myriad skin issues. Scientifically speaking, people in R&D circles are determining whether there is a time and place for live organisms, in other words, live bacteria, or whether we need only rely on microbial extracts, such as antimicrobial peptides and natural antibiotics, collectively referred to as supernatants, to deliver results. I explain it like this. You can either have live bacteria that continue to live and multiply and replace those on the skin, or you can grow bacteria in a big jar, then skim off all the good stuff the bacteria have produced as a result of their own metabolism and secreted into their environment, the supernatants. The byproducts of bacteria metabolism are increasingly being referred to as postbiotics, and some of these postbiotics have positive effects on human health. Postbiotics can also include heat-killed bacteria, bacterial fragments, and lysed bacteria. We can lyse bacteria, break them apart, either physically, by shaking them, or chemically, by adding a detergent-like ingredient that breaks them apart. Then use that bacterial lysate in skincare products. Lysates contain pieces of cell wall along with pieces of DNA, and those pieces might be enough to alter the health of the skin. All this technology is in its explosive beginning, and top scientists at major skincare companies are exploring how best to utilize it. Just how do probiotics benefit the skin when applied topically? They mimic the actions of naturally occurring bacteria on your skin in three big ways. 1, they act as a protective shield with calming effects. 2, they provide ammunition against bad bacteria. And 3, they boost skin's innate functionality. These effects ultimately help reduce inflammation, which in turn helps limit flare-ups in skin and prevent premature aging. Let me explain. Probiotics act as a protective shield with calming effects. First, topically applied probiotics cause what's called bacterial interference. Put another way, they protect the skin by interfering with the ability of bad microorganisms to provoke an immune reaction. They essentially blind skin cells so they don't see bad microorganisms and other pathogens that can signal an immune response. The bodies of patients with acne and rosacea often perceive the living microorganisms on the skin as foreign and therefore bad and something to attack. So their immune systems jump into action to counter this potential threat, resulting in inflammation, redness, or acne lesions. I should clarify a few facts about acne and rosacea before moving on. You'll recall that a particular species of bacterium called P. acnes, which triggers inflammation, has been implicated as one of the main players in acne. Similarly, a microscopic parasitic mite of the genus Demodex can cause rosacea when its numbers proliferate beyond healthful, normal levels. All humans harbor Demodex. It is a normal inhabitant of human facial skin. But Demodex has often been found in numbers 15 to 18 times greater in rosacea patients than in healthy subjects. What's really interesting is that these bugs are not infections. It's not like you can just wipe them out using a 2-week course of antibiotics. And they are not acting alone. P. acnes by itself isn't enough to cause acne, and Demodex isn't enough to cause rosacea. They are only part of a complex picture. Multiple factors are involved in both skin conditions, including how revved up the immune cells in your skin may be. Topically applied probiotics can actually create a calming environment for skin cells, simply by touching them and connecting with them. Imagine a nurturing caregiver placing a warm blanket over an anxious child while rubbing his back and telling him that everything will be all right. That soothing, calming environment encourages a child to perceive his or her world as less threatening. The same holds true for some strains of probiotics. When they're placed on skin cells, those good bugs calm the parts of the cells that may want to react to a potential threat in the area. These healthy signals produced by the probiotics essentially prevent the skin cells from sending attack messages to the immune system that result in acne or rosacea flares. These signals are produced when part of the probiotic binds to part of the skin cell, sending a cascade of molecular signals deep into the layers of the skin. They turn on the happy signals and turn off the inflammatory torrent of tiny molecular messengers. They tell the skin to cease fire. At ease, troops. When cultures of human skin were treated topically with a certain strain of Lactobacillus paracasei, for example, scientists were able to show that the probiotic turned the volume down on skin inflammation. It did so by inhibiting substance P, which, you'll recall, is a biomolecule famously tied to inflammation. Substance P is released from nerves and inflammatory cells. Because substance P may amplify inflammation as well as sebum production, controlling it could be a way to treat acne. Clinical trials of topical preparations containing other probiotics have also assessed their effect on acne. One trial involved the facial application of a lotion containing Enterococcus faecalis for 8 weeks. The scientists noted a 50% reduction in the participants' acne compared to people using a placebo, a lotion without probiotics. Another trial, using Lactobacillus plantarum, showed promise too, decreasing the number and size of acne lesions, as well as their redness. L. plantarum's anti-inflammatory effects may also hold promise for reducing rosacea flares. For the record, we don't really know what causes rosacea, but it typically doesn't appear until adulthood, usually between the ages of 30 and 60, and is much more common in women than men. It can cause quite a lot of distress, and it doesn't help that conventional treatments, which I mentioned earlier, can exacerbate that unease. No spicy food, no alcohol, and oh yeah, don't stress out. These recommendations often don't provide substantial relief, but probiotics are now leading the way to better results. Masks made with probiotic-rich kefir are proving to be very soothing to skin afflicted by rosacea. And there's a bonus. Kefir has the added benefit of containing lactic acid, an anti-aging ingredient. Probiotics produce substances that combat bad bugs. Probiotics can help fight harmful bugs, including viruses and fungi, and keep them from triggering inflammation. It's a natural part of a bacterium's survival strategy to make substances that suppress or kill other microbes. Imagine a good bacterium shooting tiny little missiles into its environment, your skin. These microbial missiles, also called antimicrobial peptides, can poke holes in bad bacteria, causing them to die. Scientists are currently working to determine which probiotics make the substances that slaughter bad bacteria. I co-authored a paper in 2006 with my mentor at the time, Dr. David Margolis, that was among the first to show how certain substances secreted by bacterial strains can inhibit growth of P. acnes. Together, we identified one particular strain, Streptococcus salivarius, that could effectively combat acne. S. salivarius is a prominent component of the microbiome in the mouth and throat, and secretes what's called a bacteriocin-like inhibitory substance, BLIS, capable of keeping tabs on P. acnes. In addition to their antimicrobial activity, S. salivarius bacterial cells themselves inhibit a number of inflammatory pathways, thus making them an important player in immunity. You can thank your S. salivarius colonies for helping you avoid ear and throat infections caused by bad bacteria. My fascination with S. salivarius started under the guidance of Dr. Margolis in my med school days, after I read about Dr. John Tagg, a microbiologist from New Zealand who wanted to find a better way to support throat health in children after he suffered from his own throat conditions as a child. He found that some strains of S. salivarius could produce antimicrobial peptides that kill off bad strains of bacteria in the throat, such as the one that causes strep throat, technically Streptococcus pyogenes, also known as Group A Streptococcus. Dr. Tagg's work intrigued me so much that I wanted to see if this species could also help fight acne. Remember, I was a microbiology nut. In fact, what I did was go from fraternity house to fraternity house at the University of Pennsylvania, collecting samples. I'd swab the tongues and inner cheeks of undergrad frat boys at parties. I then grew and tested the collected strains in a laboratory. Lo and behold, I found some specific strains of S. salivarius that were amazingly powerful inhibitors of P. acnes. They produced little missiles that could stop P. acnes in its tracks. This work is what eventually led to my patented BLIS technology for treating acne. The rise of resistant bacterial pathogens has made this a significant discovery. The P. acnes species is getting too smart. It has determined how to avoid eradication, usually through genetic mutations that render it resistant to current therapies. Many commonly used antibiotic treatments are becoming useless because bacteria have essentially managed to revolt, changing in ways that make them impenetrable to our arsenal of drugs. This is already well documented in acne patients harboring resistant P. acnes strains. Their acne is totally unaffected by the medications we like to prescribe. In other words, antibiotic lotions that miraculously clear skin in time for the prom are not even making a dent in some teenage skin these days. So we're forced to think of other strategies. What's more, when a patient is using, say, a topical antibiotic for acne, everyone in the house is more prone to carrying resistant strains of bacteria on the skin and in the gut. It can become a self-perpetuating vicious cycle that leaves everyone more vulnerable and less healthy. And it gets worse. People who use antibiotics to treat acne are twice as likely to develop upper respiratory tract infections as people with acne who are not on antibiotics. The bad bug-killing power of some bacterial strains extends to other skin conditions as well. Since my work with S. salivarius, other researchers have documented certain strains' ability to keep the skin's microbiome in check. Richard Gallo and his colleagues from the University of California at San Diego, for example, have discovered that certain strains of Staphylococcus, which naturally lives on human skin and in our noses and mouths, produce chemicals that kill the bad type of staph, Staphylococcus aureus. S. aureus can cause severe skin infections and even death when strains become resistant to traditional antibiotics. S. aureus was the species that British chemist Alexander Fleming was studying when he discovered antibiotics in 1928. It is a common member of the skin's family of microbes, but it's especially abundant on people who suffer from eczema. We don't currently know the exact mechanism for the association between too much S. aureus and eczema, but scientists such as Gallo are suggesting that S. aureus could at least partly drive the symptoms of eczema, mainly by causing inflammation and triggering allergic reactions. On the other hand, two other strains of staph bacteria, namely Staphylococcus hominis, called A9, and Staphylococcus epidermidis, can effectively suppress the growth of their evil twin, S. aureus, including the more evil drug-resistant versions that we know as methicillin-resistant S. aureus, or MRSA. It is thought now that drug-resistant microbes, such as MRSA, are partly to blame for the 10 million people who die each year around the world from infections. These scientists cleverly furthered their experiments by creating a probiotic cream containing these heroic ingredients and testing it on people with eczema. And amazingly, the subjects' levels of S. aureus fell by more than 90%. In two people, the culprit bacteria disappeared entirely. In a similar but unrelated study, German scientists identified a microbe called Staphylococcus lugdunensis, lugdunin, which also thrives in our noses and produces a chemical that specifically kills S. aureus. The world awaits more such findings with other strains. These groundbreaking studies are good news. They signal the start of a new antibiotic era, one in which we look to our own microbial companions to defend our health. Soon we'll know even more about which strains pack the most powerful antimicrobial punch to help keep certain skin conditions at bay and improve skin health. Probiotics boost skin's function. The evidence is mounting on the power of topical probiotics in boosting skin's overall functionality as it ages and deals with exposure to damaging elements such as UV radiation. As you can imagine, UV radiation is considered the strongest precipitator of extrinsic aging. As we get older, our body's defense mechanisms grow weaker, including those in the skin that combat free radical production. If we can't quench free radicals, they will damage cellular structures, including DNA, fats, and proteins such as collagen. Turns out that many probiotics produce substances that not only have antibiotic effects, but also have antioxidant and free radical scavenging properties. A certain strain of Bacillus coagulans, for instance, has been demonstrated to possess such powers. And when researchers genetically modified a strain of Lactobacillus to produce a free radical fighting substance, They discovered that they could generate a colony that can help restore balance between free radical scavengers and the free radical production in skin. Put another way, these probiotic soldiers keep the peace by managing the harmony between free radicals, the rogues, and free radical fighters, the rebels. Good bugs on skin may also help build collagen, increase hydration, and improve the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles. In fact, both Streptococcus thermophilus and B. coagulans can increase the production of ceramides in skin. Ceramides are a vital component of skin. They protect against moisture loss and support the skin's matrix to keep it supple and firm. These molecules naturally decline with age, so having bacteria around to keep production up is a good thing for aging skin. L-plantarum has also been shown to help promote repairs to the skin barrier, making it a possible therapeutic for aging skin. Healthy skin exhibits a slightly acidic pH in the range of 4.2 to 5.6, a level that inhibits pathogenic bacterial colonization. This acidic setting also helps maintain a moisture-rich environment and control enzyme activity. Translation: your skin stays supple, strong, and hydrated. But as we age, that pH begins to change. After you reach the age of 70, your skin's pH level rises significantly, which stimulates certain enzyme activity that has the negative impact of breaking down proteins. Think collagen. Probiotics, however, can lower pH back down to optimal levels by producing acidic molecules that in turn restore enzyme activity closer to what it is in younger, healthier skin, so it functions and looks better. I could go on and on about the science of topically applied probiotics. To say this field is exploding is an understatement. In Chapter 8, I'll give you a cheat sheet of what to look for in topical products based on all this research. For now, let's turn to the science behind oral probiotics. Boost your glow with oral probiotics. The father of the modern probiotic movement was born more than 170 years ago. The Russian biologist Elie Metchnikoff is credited with being the first to determine how lactobacillus bacteria could be related to health. Metchnikoff is also considered the father of immunology. He predicted many aspects of current immunobiology and was the first to propose the idea that lactic acid bacteria are beneficial to human health. Winner of the 1908 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for discovering white blood cells that can engulf and destroy harmful bacteria and particles, phagocytes, Metchnikoff recognized a correlation between the longevity of Bulgarian peasants and their habit of consuming fermented milk products. In fact, he coined the word probiotic to describe beneficial bacteria. Metchnikoff, who believed that toxic bacteria in the gut caused aging and that lactic acid could prolong life, drank sour milk every day. His work inspired 20th century Japanese microbiologist Minoru Shiroda to investigate a causal relationship between bacteria and good intestinal health. Dr. Shiroda's studies eventually led to the marketing of fermented products, probiotics, worldwide. I'll be encouraging you to consume probiotics by eating foods such as kimchi and yogurt and beverages such as kombucha. But it's also worthwhile to consider probiotics delivered via a capsule or pill. The most studied star families of oral probiotics are Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium. You'll note that these strains are found in many fermented foods and topical probiotics too. Several strains of Lactobacillus demonstrate widespread systemic anti-inflammatory effects. L. paracasei, for example, has anti-inflammatory properties that help reduce the risk of many skin disorders from the inside out. It's been further shown to improve the skin barrier and prevent water loss. Water retention is a good thing if you want glowing skin. This strain is currently being studied for its effect on patients with rosacea, dry or sensitive skin, and atopic dermatitis, eczema. Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG GG are the first letters in the surnames of Sherwood Gorbach and Barry Golden, the scientists who isolated this strain of bacteria from a healthy human in 1983 and patented it, has been shown to help reduce the odds of eczema in babies at high risk for the condition whose mothers took the probiotic 2 to 4 weeks before giving birth, as well as after delivery if they were breastfeeding, or if they weren't breastfeeding when they added the bacteria to infant formula. The prevalence of eczema in these babies was less than what's typically seen among babies at high risk for eczema whose mothers do not take probiotics. Another lactobacillus, L. plantarum, may act as a potent anti-ager. In a 2014 study, this strain reduced the number and depth of wrinkles in hairless mice compared to those in a control group. The lactobacillus family can also reduce UV-induced sun damage in the skin. The results spoke for themselves when Lactobacillus johnsonii and 7.2 milligrams of carotenoids, the plant-derived antioxidant that gives vegetables, such as carrots, their color, were administered to healthy women for 10 weeks before exposing them to either simulated or natural sunlight. Compared to the placebo group, this dietary supplementation prevented the expected UV-induced decrease in Langerhans cell density. Langerhans cells, you'll recall, are a critical part of your skin's immune system. They help inhibit unnecessary inflammation that can manifest itself in nasty, stubborn skin conditions. In this particular study, the scientists also concluded that the probiotic helped quicken the rebalancing of the participants' immune systems soon after exposure to harsh UV radiation. The Bifidobacterium genus has a lot to offer, too. Several experiments on mice showed that the oral administration of Bifidobacterium breve prevented UV-induced damage to skin, which typically leads to a compromised barrier, water loss, and other adverse outcomes in the skin's health and functionality. Translation? Mice who ingested this healthy bacteria were less susceptible to damage from the sun. It was almost like they were drinking their sunscreen. Other studies have shown that Bifidobacterium can help lessen the production of free radicals in skin upon UV exposure, which means the bacteria can ultimately prevent the damage caused by those free radicals, including inflammation and accelerated aging in the form of more wrinkles and loss of suppleness as a result of less collagen production. While I'm certainly not saying that a probiotic supplement is going to replace your sunscreen, you would do well to boost your skin's protection from the sun's harmful rays by both taking a probiotic and applying your sunscreen before you head outside. The more protection we have against UV rays, the lower our risk of skin cancer and premature signs of aging, such as wrinkles and brown spots. Because of the prevalence of acne, studies that examine the effects of treating it with probiotics do continue to dominate. And once again, we find that strains from the Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium genera reign supreme. Small studies from Italy, Russia, and South Korea have shown that these bacteria also may help people better tolerate acne treatment in conjunction with oral antibiotics. Yes, together, but spaced apart, so the probiotic has a chance to work. A 2013 clinical trial demonstrated that oral antibiotics and probiotics might provide dual benefits specifically for inflammatory acne. When this study came out, I was not at all surprised. I prescribe probiotic supplements to all my female acne patients whenever I prescribe a course of oral antibiotics. Why? To prevent the well-known side effects of antibiotics, including stomach upset and yeast infections. Every so often, I'd have a patient return to me saying that even though her oral course of antibiotics had ended, she had continued to take the probiotic supplement because she believed the supplement was helping her skin. After hearing this story again and again, I started prescribing probiotics along with any antibiotic prescription I wrote to both men and women because it wasn't just yeast infections I was trying to avoid. The patient's acne cleared quickly, and they experienced fewer side effects, just as the 2013 study confirmed. I realized that probiotics by themselves were affecting my patients' conditions for the better. That was years before this study came out. Finally, I want to mention one other star player from a totally different strain, Bacillus coagulans. This gem has been shown to have positive effects on immune function to the extent that it may reduce the production of free radicals, which means it could potentially help control acne, though more studies are needed. There's a lot of data showing the relationship between free radical formation and acne, so it would make sense that anything that inhibits free radical formation would help prevent acne. This bacterium has a long history of being used to alleviate gastrointestinal problems such as diarrhea, including traveler's diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, and C. diff, which you know is my fave. It is also used to prevent respiratory infections. In fact, a patented strain is advertised as doing just that by enhancing T-cell response to certain viral respiratory infections. We don't know yet exactly how this bacteria works to enhance immunity, but animal studies have shown that it may help regulate immune function and decrease harmful bacteria. Both these effects are good for skin health. That's just the proverbial tip of the probiotic iceberg. I hope it's enough to get you excited about starting a probiotic supplement regimen today. Before you feel overwhelmed by all this information and study after study, and try to take notes before running out to get your hands on a basket full of probiotics, don't worry. In part two, I will give you step-by-step instructions and guidance on what to buy, what to avoid, and how to implement a simple plan that will reprogram your microbiome from the inside out. What all this astonishing new information means, really, is that you get to control your skin health just by nourishing your microbiome. Even if you feel like you're at a disadvantage somehow. In other words, if you answered yes to a lot of the questions in the previous quiz, I have solutions that will help you turn the train around.
Part 2. Glow with your gut. Welcome to the transformational phase in the process of cultivating a beautiful new you. Now that you've gotten a panoramic view of the gut-brain-skin connection, it's time to turn to the ways in which you can support the ideal health and function of your skin from the inside out and the outside in. In this section of the book, we look in depth at the habits that foster a radiant appearance. Diet, exercise, relaxation, stress reduction, and sleep. I will also cover skincare rules and how to supercharge your skin with my Go to Glow supplement recommendations. As you enter part two, feel free to go at your own pace as you implement my strategies and make lifestyle shifts. I will give you a detailed program in part three that is based on the information in part two, but I suspect many of you will begin to execute as soon as you learn. The faster you follow my recommendations, the sooner you will feel and see results. And remember, we're not just aiming for better skin. We're going to realize a whole lot more than that. Increased energy, fewer chronic conditions such as gastrointestinal distress, reduced anxiety, better sleep, and a smaller waistline. All those benefits will lead to others too, such as getting more done, feeling more accomplished, and simply enjoying life more. Ready? Set? Let's glow.
Chapter 6. Feed your face. Dietary recommendations for putting your best face forward. The fact that the gut-brain-skin axis determines so much of how we look and feel from the inside out is accelerating our understanding of what it takes to have great skin. It's also revolutionizing treatments. The truth is that there is so much we can do starting today just through diet. Solutions to chronic skin disorders are already at our fingertips, and it's so simple. This chapter focuses on my dietary recommendations and on explaining why, for example, it's important to eliminate certain commonly consumed foods from your plate. At the center of my message is the astonishing relationship between the food you eat and your body's and skin's biochemistry. Most of my patients lead super busy lives and are often not thinking about what their lifestyle habits, especially dietary choices, are doing to their skin. Perhaps this describes you. But you can't have great skin without a great diet, period. In addition to my in-office treatments, dietary modification is the most powerful tool for achieving the changes I want to see in my patients. It's also the most important area to address in terms of rebalancing the gut-brain-skin axis. As you learned in part one, we delegate some of our bodily functions to the microbes that inhabit our bodies inside and out, and they outnumber our human cells by a lot, possibly by as many as 10 to 1, though estimates do vary, and scientists are still figuring this out. This new knowledge is both exciting and empowering, because it means we are not bound by what we have inherited through our family histories or genes. We can change many things about ourselves that have a direct effect on our well-being and appearance, including the state of our microbiomes. We can adjust our food choices and dietary supplements. We can change how we take care of our skin, manage stress, and move our bodies. And we can even improve the quality of sleep we get. And all of these things in turn can actually affect how our body's physiology behaves, right down to its genetic expression. While we used to think that diet had little to do with the skin's appearance, we now know otherwise, thanks to new science, which I'll detail in this chapter. This area is one of my personal favorites, which is why I have devoted so much of my career to perfecting my knowledge of diet and the skin. There are countless simple food changes you can make to help your skin fight aging and build new collagen. For example, sprinkling just a pinch of cinnamon on your daily cappuccino or yogurt can improve circulation, giving you a healthy glow and transporting essential nutrients to the layers of the skin where collagen and elastic tissue are being produced. Leafy greens such as spinach and kale are an excellent source of zinc, which helps your skin break down old, damaged collagen, allowing new collagen to form. You see, food is not just fuel. More than anything, food is information. It's data for your DNA and microbiome, sending signals to skin cells and its microbial communities and creating solutions to skin problems. You must stop thinking that food is just a source of calories for energy or simply a source of micro and macronutrients. Food actually talks to your cells and microbes, including those that thrive deep inside and the ones that coat your skin. My dietary protocol will take you away from the typical inflammatory Western diet, which is high in unhealthful fats and sugars. It features fresh whole foods, organic when possible, with an emphasis on low glycemic ingredients. It allows for one serving of whole grains a day. For example, one slice of sprouted bread or one serving of steel-cut oatmeal or quinoa. And limits refined carbs and dairy products. You can still eat yogurt, eggs, and certain cheeses. As you may know, low glycemic foods will not raise your blood sugar level and insulin level significantly. It's also important to note that all the recent scientific literature points to a strong connection between glycemic loads and risk for skin disorders. High GI, high glycemic index foods trigger a cascade of endocrine responses that can cause skin issues by triggering the activity of certain androgens, growth hormones, and cell signaling pathways. You'll rejoice at not having to count calories or worry about portion control. Once you begin to eat in the manner I am prescribing, which allows you plenty of leeway to find the perfect diet for you, you'll rarely overeat again and should never get to the point of feeling so ravenous that you'll eat whatever's in front of you. This nutrition protocol will reprogram your body's sense of hunger and satiety, so you'll be able to effortlessly eat the right amount of food for you. You'll know how much is enough based on genuine instinct. Now, that's an incredibly powerful place to be, a place where you no longer have a diet mentality and can trust your body's innate cues to tell you what, when, and how much to eat. I should stress that everyone is unique in her own biological way. Because of this, not everyone can eat exactly the same things in the same quantities and look and feel great. The way your body responds to food is different from the way other people's bodies respond. Respect that fact and give yourself permission to experiment. This plan is highly customizable depending on your personal preferences. What I am offering is a basic template, albeit one that ensures optimal support for your gut-brain-skin axis. Modify it as you see fit. Keeping a food journal is a good way to identify patterns. Some people, for example, may be very sensitive to all carbohydrates, while others might be sensitive to only high GI foods, such as bagels and most breads, white potatoes, corn chips, donuts, and french fries. We'll cover all this in detail in a moment. Bear in mind that through dietary change, you are recalibrating not just your gut-brain-skin axis, but also your taste buds and food preferences. In fact, I think the biggest change you can make for the better when it comes to all this is to make an effort to alter your palate. Slowly. I want you to go from craving sweets to appreciating tart, bitter, and sour flavors. Now, this won't happen overnight, especially since the food industry has helped us develop a sweet addiction, if you will, by adding sugars or artificial sweeteners to everything from salad dressings to protein bars falsely marketed as healthy. But remember this, when you taste that sour flavor in those fermented foods rich in probiotics, for example sauerkraut, kombucha, organic Greek yogurt, without any added sugar, you are feeding your gut what it needs to thrive. The first day or two is always a little rough, but soon enough you will wake up and the flavors you once craved will taste disgustingly sweet to you. New science tells us that we can begin to change the health and function of our intestinal microbiome within a matter of days. It is no wonder that rates of chronic disease rooted in the gut have gone up in tandem with rates of chronic skin disorders. The fact that the Western diet causes a slew of chronic diseases, from diabetes and heart disease to cancer and every manner of skin disorders, is no longer based on anecdotal evidence. Plenty of studies, some of which I've already covered, show without a doubt the destructive, inflammatory impact of the Western diet, which stresses quantity over quality. Consequently, we suffer from enormous nutritional voids. What these studies demonstrate is that we are overfed and undernourished. A diet high in sugar, processed vegetable fats, and synthetic chemicals, and low in essential micronutrients and antioxidants is setting us up for the development of chronic inflammation. And as you know by now, our skin will show that inflammation in some way. Therefore, the greatest form of medicine is to follow a dietary protocol that honors real, wholesome food that won't break your skin or harm its microbiome. Such a diet limits inflammatory foods, promotes nutrient density, and naturally supports the gut-brain-skin axis. My dietary recommendations are rooted in years of working with patients and watching them transform themselves largely by following the same protocol laid out in this book. I've also done my homework enough to know the science working behind it. We have enough evidence to determine the best starting template for a body whose ailments manifest themselves in stubborn skin disorders. Wonder drugs do exist in our food kingdom, and they can help you reclaim control of your skin in unfathomable ways. Where are they, and how do they work? Let's go to my BOGLO food rules. In Chapter 10, I'll help you create meal plans based on the following recommendations. BOGLO food rules. Whenever I give talks, either to the medical community, a lay audience, or patients in the office, I outline five simple, highly practical dietary rules that are all backed by science. I will walk you through each one of them. Go low GI, whole and unprocessed. Be choosy with dairy. Load up on antioxidant-rich plants. Favor omega-3 fatty acids over omega-6 fatty acids. Eat your prebiotics and probiotics. GLOW rule number 1. Go low GI, whole and unprocessed. Studies conducted on non-Western populations with a very low incidence of skin conditions, and in some where skin disorders are virtually non-existent, have documented a common theme: an absence of processed foods and refined carbohydrates. In other words, no high glycemic index foods. They eat closer to nature, as our hunter-gatherer ancestors did tens of thousands of years ago, a diet rich in healthful fats and proteins, in which most of the carbohydrates come from low GI fruits and vegetables. Refined sugar is not on the menu. Foods don't come out of boxes with labels on them. Not only do these populations have glowing skin, they also don't suffer from obesity, hypertension, or malnutrition. And cardiac death and stroke are extremely rare. According to my research and that of my colleagues, of all the potential dietary culprits in cases of bad skin, carbohydrates rank among the highest on the list, if not at number one. This is especially true when it comes to acne, which is probably the most studied skin disorder in the world because so many people in developed nations suffer from it, and the numbers continue to rise. As I wrote in a 2014 paper, our genes have not changed, but our rates of acne have, significantly. The evidence to date points to a stunning correlation between refined carbohydrates and acne, which became the main message of that paper. Numerous studies show that when people prone to acne alter their diets to reduce their sugar intake and favor low GI foods, they experience reduced numbers of acne lesions, reduced severity of acne breakouts, and reduced sebum production. There are multiple biological reasons to explain the connection, but one that stands out is the effect that refined sugars have on spiking blood sugar, which in turn can also increase hormones that stimulate oil production. These hormones can even change the composition of your skin's oil, making it more prone to acne formation. I would go so far as to say that refined carbs exacerbate most skin conditions. Understanding acne is often the bellwether for understanding the etiology of other skin disorders. In other words, what's good for remedying acne is also good for resolving most other skin issues. And when it comes to editing out the bad carbohydrates that will ruin your skin, nothing speaks louder than the glycemic index. It is the best meter, or cheat sheet, for knowing what to eat and what not to eat. Get to know your glycemic index. The GI was developed decades ago as a measure of how foods, particularly those containing carbohydrates, affect the amount of glucose in the blood. The GI uses a scale of 0 to 100 and ranks foods against the reference point of pure glucose, which has a GI of 100. Foods with a high GI, 70 and above, are rapidly digested and absorbed, causing fast but transient, lasting an hour or two, elevations in blood sugar, which in turn trigger a spike in insulin, the hormone responsible for ushering glucose out of the bloodstream and into cells for use. Insulin also stimulates fat and amino acid uptake into cells and inhibits the body from breaking down stored fat, glycogen, and proteins. Typical high GI foods are processed and filled with sugar and white flour. Low GI foods, 55 and less, such as leafy greens, quinoa, fiber-rich fruit, beans, lentils, and some starchy vegetables such as sweet potatoes and winter squash, are digested more slowly, producing gradual rises in blood sugar and insulin levels. Many of these foods, including asparagus and broccoli, hardly change blood sugar levels at all. Those foods that have a GI between 56 and 69 are considered medium and can be consumed in moderation. These include foods such as brown or basmati rice and whole wheat breads and pastas. You can go to my website for a list of common foods and their GI ranking. It's worth noting that some studies have demonstrated that the glycemic index is not absolutely fixed. Our individual metabolic factors affect the way we process various foods. In other words, a food with a GI of 50 might act like a 60 in me and a 40 in you, especially depending on how you combine that food with others. Rarely do we eat foods in isolation. Sometimes you will come across the term glycemic load, GL, rather than glycemic index. The GL is another metric developed to factor in the carbohydrate content per serving, because some foods that appear high on the GI actually do not contain enough carbohydrates per serving to raise blood sugar significantly. Watermelon is one such food. It has a high GI of 80, but its actual GL is low. The cheat sheet on my website simplifies this for you, and you won't have to memorize any numbers. Our bodies are different. While it's true that there's probably some variation, I still think the GI is, at a very basic level, a helpful tool for broadly categorizing foods by sugar load. What this also means, however, is that you need to be aware of how foods affect you. Only you can know. If a food that's low on the GI seems to give you trouble, avoid that in the future. Go by how you feel and look, rather than what the chart says is good for you. Use your food journal to help document and uncover patterns and sensitivities you might not otherwise realize are there. Using the glycemic index to choose the best foods will help you gravitate toward whole foods and steer clear of processed, packaged junk. On my protocol, you'll eliminate all refined carbs and flours. This includes all the crap that you know is not good for you. Chips, cookies, pastries, baked desserts, candy, most commercial energy and protein bars, fried foods, and a lot of foods labeled fat-free or diet. Sugar is in almost every packaged, processed food. It's quite unbelievable how ubiquitous it is today. But look for it, and you will find it. Even in unlikely places, such as hamburger buns, french fries, potato chips, and processed meats. It may be called something other than sugar, sucrose, fructose, agave nectar, high fructose corn syrup. But sugar is sugar, no matter how you spell it. And it can be hard to avoid if you don't make a conscious effort. Also be aware that the body handles fructose and glucose differently. Briefly, glucose naturally occurring in many whole foods, such as fruits and some vegetables, as well as whole grain breads, pasta, and, to a lesser extent, legumes, can be converted directly into energy for cells to use. Your body recognizes it immediately, gets that insulin pumping to deal with it, then tells your brain to stop eating when it's had enough. On the other hand, fructose, a sugar found naturally in fruit and honey, but also in refined and processed foods, goes directly to the liver to be processed without causing an insulin release that helps control how much of it you eat. That's not a good thing, because you don't get that insulin reaction. Your satiety signals won't work. So it's easy to consume more fructose than is good for you. Moreover, fructose is more likely to get turned into fat in the liver than into fuel. The majority of the fructose we consume is not present in its natural form. In other words, as bound to glucose to make sucrose, or delivered in its natural source, in other words, whole fruit. The average American consumes 163 grams of refined sugars, 652 calories, per day. Of this, roughly 76 grams, 302 calories, are from a highly processed form of fructose derived from high fructose corn syrup. Fructose, especially the processed kind, is 7 times more likely to result in sticky protein clumps called glycation end products, which cause inflammation. Although it doesn't have an immediate effect on blood sugar because the liver deals with it, large quantities of fructose from unnatural sources have long-term adverse effects. Numerous studies have shown that it's associated with impaired glucose tolerance, insulin resistance, and hypertension. Moreover, it does not trigger the production of hormones key to regulating our metabolism, which is why diets high in fructose can lead to obesity and its accompanying metabolic consequences. Sugar in any form causes multiple changes in our bodies, from our cellular membranes and our arteries to our hormones, immune systems, gut, and even microbiomes. Sugar is our modern scourge. We are not designed to tolerate the levels we consume today. By any other name. There are more than 50 names for sugar, among them barley malt, beet sugar, cane juice crystals, caramel, corn syrup, crystalline fructose, date sugar, dextrin, dextrose, evaporated cane juice, fructose, fruit juice, high fructose corn syrup, invert sugar, malt, maltodextrin, maltose, rice syrup, sorghum syrup, sucrose. Sugars classified as artificial. Acesulfame potassium, Sunet, sweet one. Aspartame, NutraSweet, equal. Neotame, Newtame. Saccharin, sweet and low, sweet twin, sugar twin. Sucralose, Splenda. Remember from chapter 2 that many artificial sweeteners can damage your metabolism by actually altering the composition of your microbiome. They make you much more susceptible to overeating and can trigger spikes in insulin levels, increasing storage of fat. Food companies are now hiding these artificial sweeteners under obscure names in their products because of increasing public concern. The list of artificial sweeteners is long and continues to grow with new formulations. They not only lurk in many prepared foods such as salad dressings, baked goods, processed snack foods, light and diet foods, and breakfast cereals. They can also be found in unexpected places, such as toothpaste, liquid medicines, chewing gum, and frozen desserts. Glycation-related aging. Glycation is the biochemical term for the bonding of sugar molecules to proteins, fats, and amino acids, the spontaneous reaction that causes the sugar molecule to attach itself is sometimes referred to as the Maillard reaction. Louis-Camille Maillard first described this process in the early 1900s. Glycation also occurs when you brown the outsides of foods using high heat. For example, when you toast bread or fry a steak, it creates flavor and changes the color of the food. Although Maillard predicted that this reaction could have an important impact on medicine,